And welcome to another edition of the Jersnet podcast, the independent Rangers podcast by fans for fans, where all the content is absolutely free. Tonight, as always, we are coming to you in association with Forest Precision Engineering. And as always, I'll be your host on this beautiful Sunday evening as we review the game from yesterday. But before we get into that, I want to encourage you to visit the Jersnet website. Not only do we have our main website with a host of quality articles and online museum, but it also hosts our popular forums, which are a great place to keep up to date with the latest Rangers news and discussion. Now, tonight, as always, we are live on YouTube, and we'd ask that you continue to spread the word amongst your friends and family, share the pod on social media, subscribe to the channel, as well as stop by the forums and join in the chat there too. Now, I need to give another mention to our partners over at Forest Precision Engineering. They're a Glasgow-based engineering company who have been a big commercial supporter of Rangers and Jersnet for a number of years, and we are delighted to have them supporting the pod. If you want more information about them, please visit their website at www.forestprecisionEng.com. They've also got a stunning executive lounge in the Ibrox main stand, and for more information on that, you can email the club at hospitality@rangers.co.uk. Now, joining me on this beautiful Sunday is Mr. Alan Rogers. How you doing, Alan?
Yeah, good to see you, mate. Not bad. An interesting day, to say the least. I'm having a beer. I know it's a school night, cause I'm working in the morning, but I'm having a beer mainly because my son was at a party earlier this afternoon with one of his wee nursery mates. So it's been a long day. So I think I've deserved this, you know.
You do, mate. I don't envy. I remember the days when my kids were that age. So yes, it's enjoy while you can. And Ross, welcome. It's been a while. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm doing well. I don't have any kids. I found myself with a free Sunday. You know, I got to lunchtime. I'm thinking, oh, I'll see what's on the telly. I found a game of football to watch, if you would believe that. I don't support either of the teams involved. Entertaining game in the end. And it's put me in a really, really good mood.
Yeah, you would be forgiven at first glance at watching that, given the cow field that it was played on. but I don't think anybody on this podcast is going to be caring what that surface looks like. It's only the result that matters. But it was good. I guess we'll focus on ourselves like we should be doing over the course of this next seven games. But before we get into the game, I just wanted to pick up on some of the stuff that the manager had been saying recently, because he's getting a wee bit prickly, I think, Alan, when we question or at least ask questions about the mentality of the team. And I think as fans, sometimes we can get a wee bit guilty of focusing too much on that. And, you know, we always seem to give teams credit or opposition teams credit when they find a way to win or when they find a way to kind of stifle us, but we're not so good at really cutting our own team that much slack when it comes to grinding out results and stuff. You know, I think the key for us now is that every game is approached with the right mindset, and the players realise that every game's a must win, and we've got to start cutting the team a wee bit of slack as we go into these last seven games, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think it's just something that the support are prone to doing. You know, we're our own harshest critics. And it was indicative of last weekend, you know, a grindy, horrible win, away win at a ground that we've not got a good record at. And a lot of the fan base were like, well, yeah, okay, we won, but it was still a bit shite, wasn't it? And that's just not the right approach. You know, we always used to say, look at Walter Smith, you know, so many 1-0, we just want to win, we just want to win. But I don't think the support's being honest with itself, if that's what you're saying. A certain tranches of the support are far more demanding than that. Now, I can understand why that is. And obviously, you know, it's an entertainment and you want to enjoy the game and you don't want to be sitting on the edge of your seat or biting your fingernails. But at this juncture in a season, particularly a season of this nature where there's three teams vying for the title and it's as tense and as close as it is, there's no temptation of fate here, please, none. But when it's as tense as it is, every result is absolutely crucial. Every point is crucial. Every goal could be crucial. 1-0 wins are absolutely fine by me. So I can understand Danny Rowe being a wee bit prickly. And I think he's right to say, look, hark back 6 months, look where we were when he came in and look where we are now. Are we now perfect? No. Are we now a brilliant team? No. We've still got loads of issues within the team. I get all that. But are we in a much, much better place? Absolutely we are. And I can see his point when he gets a bit prickly and thinks, well, hang on, let's cut these guys a little bit slack, because we know it's not a vintage Rangers team. But yet, here we are with, you know, seven of the most crucial games in the club's modern history coming up. It's not a bad position to be in, and the support just need to remember that at times.
Yeah, I think on that topic, Ross, just before you joined, I was saying the exact same thing to Frankie. It's remarkable what you think that when the manager took over, we're sitting in eighth position in this league, 11 points behind Hearts. Yet here we are, you know, going into the final stretch, seven games to go. If we manage to win all seven, you'd like to think that we'd be crowned league champions, goal difference aside. It's quite remarkable that we've got ourselves back into that position, but it is now just about grinding the wins, regardless of how well we play or how free-flowing the football is. You know, the key thing for these players and manager is, by hook or by crook, 3 points every game between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. I think it is incredible that we're in this position. It's also incredible to think that if it weren't for really frustrating, kind of silly results like the recent one each at Motherwell, or the result at Livingston, or the 0-0 against Falkirk, we could be like 6 points clear, regardless of everything that happened at the start of the season. But you're absolutely right. And I was listening to Sports Sound yesterday after the 3 o'clock fixtures, and that was the whole theme. And they were talking about Hearts, but the whole theme was, well, Hearts will win this. It doesn't matter that they keep winning ugly, because Hearts are winning ugly. I think they were saying their last four home games have been 1-0 victories. And their whole kind of, the whole motif of that discussion was, well, Hearts will be champions if they just keep winning ugly. The same thing applies to us. And I think, you know, this season has been an absolute head wreck. I cannot get on top of it. The problem is, I don't trust us to necessarily have that consistency to grind out seven wins. I absolutely don't trust Hearts or Celtic to do the same thing either. So I agree, it'd be fantastic. Seven cup finals, focus on ourselves, it's still in our hands. I think that's too simplistic for what's actually going to happen. I don't see any team, you know, say we've got seven left, Hearts have seven left, Celtic have seven left. I don't see any of us winning five. I think if any of those three teams do win five, they probably win the league actually now. It is hugely exciting given where we were. You know, what was Russell Martin was one win in seven games or something, one win in eight, and a hell of a lot of draws. We've drawn 12 games this season, 12, and Celtic have lost eight. It's quite remarkable what's gone on.
Yeah, as and like manager, we'll focus on one game at a time at Jersey, and we won't get too far ahead of ourselves. And the starting lineup for yesterday's game was pretty much, I think, as expected. You know, we had Butland in goal, Tav, Giga, Fernandez, and Romans as the back four. Rask and Chuklani in the middle, with Moore and Asgard further up supporting Nadiri and Chimiti. Only one change, I think, that is from St Mirren Allen. Asgard coming into the team, and I think that was the only one that I kind of questioned a little bit, given his performances up until yesterday, where I thought he actually did okay. But to be honest, more than enough in that starting lineup to put away a pretty poor Aberdeen side.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, Asgard was the only real slight surprise for me. And if, you know, Scott Wilson's been ill, I think the manager hinted pretty heavily at the press conference he wasn't going to play. So it was really just a case of, you know, do you bring Kasama in, put him in the left, maybe Moore in the right, something like that. But I'm glad he kept Moore in the left, and obviously bringing Asgard. I mean, I thought Asgard did okay. I don't think he was great or had any massive impact, but he wasn't disastrous at all. And, you know, I'm pleased to see Tav keep his place. If I'm honest, I think in games that we're expecting to have a lot of the ball and to be a lot of attack, do a lot of attacking, I would have Tav in the team. I think he had a good game yesterday, put a good few dangerous balls in, and obviously an absolute perler of a free kick at the end. So I was perfectly happy with the lineup. And of course, we've got Giga and Fernandez now pretty solidly our first choice centre-half pairing. I'm a stickler for having a settled centre-half pairing. You know, it's just something I would always want in my teams. And with the chopping and changing, I always think it's just a recipe for disaster. But those two seem to have a good partnership, and they complement each other well. So I think that'll be the partnership for the run-in, touch wood, barring any injuries. So perfectly happy with that. I mean, you do have to say, sometimes you know games against Aberdeen, you think, right, I want to see who's in the Aberdeen team. And you read through it, and apart from Kevin Nisbet, I was like, who? You know, I didn't recognise the Aberdeen team. It wasn't like you could see a bunch of the players that you dislike. You think, right, he's nasty, he's going to be doing this, he's going to be doing that. They just seemed like a bunch of kind of cobbled together jobbers, if we're honest. And they played like that. They're not far off the relegation playoff. And if the pinnacle of this season could be Rangers winning the league on the final day, it would be a nice wee cherry on top if a certain team managed to slip in the playoffs and get relegated. But listen, let's not ask for too much, you know. But yeah, it was a poor Aberdeen side, and you would expect Rangers to deliver.
If Carlsberg could do football scenes, actually, that would certainly be good. I guess, Ross, we were obviously just speaking about mentality. I think the manager's pre-match presser, he mentioned slight problems for Moore and Romans. And I think it was a good sign that both started yesterday, because I think it demonstrates that actually the players are quite up for this title running. I think in the past we've had a number of players who would probably use any knock potentially as an excuse to not be available for selection. But the fact that Moore and Romans started, lasted so long, and actually had such a big impact in the game, for me is a really, really good sign of the mentality of the team at the moment. You know, they are willing to push themselves to play for the manager, for the fans, for the team.
Absolutely. And two really key players there. There are two players that have demonstrated, you can see it in I don't know if you've seen Mickey Moore's comments after the game yesterday, whether that's in the press conference or in the immediate post-match interview. He's a player that is so hungry. He's enjoying his football. Very easy to forget that he's only 18 years of age, because he seems to have all the right attributes and he'll go very, very far. Joe Romans has made such an impression since he's come in as well. And I'm actually a fan of Jaden Magoma. I think he got a fair bit of unfair criticism at times. Actually, I don't think he's been our worst performer, but he's been one of our better performers in the first half of the season. But you could see it was an area of the pitch that needed upgrading. Tour Romans has come in and has been an absolute machine. And he's been fantastic to watch. Again, I think he's a player that's come from a comparable league, but he's come from a much smaller club, a much smaller environment. And he's the kind of player that you could, you know, he'll either step up to take the opportunity and realise what this could do for him, or he'll kind of crumble, he'll struggle, he'll fail to adapt to the expectation, because the expectation from Rangers compared to Vesterlo, where he came from, is very, very different. I'm so pleased with how he has settled in, and he's, you know, cliched, but he's really hit the ground running. So I think you're absolutely right. The players want to go out and play. We've got good competition across the pitch as well now. Mm-hmm. And I think the players know, okay, perhaps not Moore and Romans, who are probably first names on the team sheet at the moment, but across the back line, you know, players like Giga, players in the centre midfield where we've got really, really good competition, and even Nadiri and Chimiti up front. I think you could see with all of them that there is real competition for places now, and they know that they will be out of the team if they don't perform. So that has really, really helped us as we go into the run-in. I suppose for those two players, for Romans and Moore, it's a good thing that they had the 2-week break coming up, the international break, and that probably makes a difference in the decision-making of them and of the medical staff. But, I mean, they're two players that had excellent games again yesterday that contributed massively and really, really driving this team on.
Yeah, it's good that the old sports scientists seem to have left and not in instructing players to be left out of starting lineups, but we won't go into that one. I guess, Alan, we'll kind of head into the game and dive into that. And, you know, a bit like Rangers, start the game really, really well. I think there's a couple of chances and, you know, dominated possession quite a bit, but we continue, I think, sometimes to be too slow with the ball. We allow Aberdeen to kind of reset a little bit too much. It becomes a bit tougher to break them down. So, well, we dominated the kind of first 30 minutes of the game. I don't think there was too many clear-cut chances that we created, and it was kind of a bit of a recurring theme that we've seen over the course of the season, where while we might dominate possession, we're not really creating that many clear-cut chances. You know, I think it's something we're going to have to rectify in the coming games. Obviously, hindsight's great. We ended up winning the game 4-1. Fantastic. But at that moment, you could kind of feel a little bit of nervousness creeping into the crowd.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, everybody can recognise the key issue with this team is the final third. We don't score enough, we don't create enough, and the chances we do create, we're not clinical enough. And that was evident again yesterday. You know, Tremiti had a chance, he went through. I mean, I think he was offside, don't get me wrong, but his finish wasn't good. It was kind of into the side netting. He had another one, I think, from a Tav corner with a header. He kind of bulleted it over. He got a good connection on it, but you know, he's really got to get that on target. And it's things like that that get the crowd a bit antsy. You know, just seeing us not taking chances, because we've seen this script before. We dominate, we don't take our chances, and then the opposition team run up and kind of shit house a goal, or we give them a goal, or it's a set piece or whatever. So you can understand the tension from the crowd. That all that having been said, I think you're right. We were in total control. You know, the Aberdeen didn't really seriously threaten. We were absolutely in control of that match. Aberdeen looked like they were playing for 0-0. And it was just a factor of, you know, how long will it take us to break us down, to break them down, or can we break them down? And thankfully we did, with, you know, not be down with a feather, a shot from outside the box. How about that?
Absolutely. And Ross, Alan brings that up. You know, it was 35 minutes. And it was the first probably real bit of quality in the game. You know, Raskins had a lovely pass into the left flank for Romans to run on to. You know, he shows great desire to get on the end of it. It's a lovely cutback. He picks out Moore, his shot saved, it breaks to Chutwani, and he kind of finishes it really, really well from the edge of the box. And it's 1-0 and probably a deserved lead at that point.
Yeah, I think it was a deserved lead. I think Tuur Romans does so well to kind of come around the back of the fullback. He shows good strength, good ball control. I don't think it's an easy finish as well from Chutwani. I think he takes it really, really well. Takes it first time, keeps it low. I mean, we have all watched enough football. How many times have you seen a ball break to someone at the edge of the box? They take it first time and it ends up in the second tier of the stand. You know, he keeps his head down over the ball, as we're all taught as kids, is to lean forward, stay over the ball. Good connection through a crowd of bodies and picks a spot. I'm pleased for him as well, by the way. Pleased for Chukwuani, because I think he's been tidy enough since he came in. Obviously, the kind of mistake for their goal yesterday aside, I think he's been pretty solid with, if maybe not exceptional. So I'm pleased for him that he gets that goal. I think he deserved that for his play. But I felt, I totally agree, you know, we have seen that story before where Rangers are having lots of possession, not really moving the ball quickly enough, not really getting that penetration. And it was probably the first time that we really got in behind Aberdeen. And, you know, credit to Raskin for the ball, credit to Robbins for the move. It felt like we were up against a Stephen Robinson team. That's the only way I can really describe it yesterday. I never really felt overly threatened by them, certainly not in the first half. So it was good to not have that kind of 0-0 dragging on to 50, 60, 70 minutes, which is when we all start getting really, really angsty. And it was a good time to score.
And I just want to pick up on Chutwani, actually, just to get your view on it, because I think he does a lot of the dirty stuff quite well. You know, he's a physical presence in the midfield, and I think actually him and Nico are starting to get a really good partnership going together. The thing that I've been impressed about is obviously the physical side of things is really good, but there was a few times yesterday where his ball carrying helped us get up the pitch 30, 40, 50 yards. And like you say, it was a great finish, because don't appreciate it when you're in the stadium, but having seen the replays, especially the angle from behind the goal, there is quite a narrow space that he's got to side foot that into where it's going to hit the net. And like you say, we've seen so many players maybe just lash at that and sky it over the bar, whatever it may be. But it was a really composed finish to kind of get us that 1-0 lead. And I think he looks a really good quality signing. As you say, he's probably taken a wee bit more to warm up than Romans has, who has come in and hit the ground running. But he looks like, as part of a midfield, he's going to be a really, really useful player for us.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's also, he's coming at a time where Conor Barron was coming into a really, really good game and then has a prolonged spell out injured. I would say that the start of the season, the first half of the season, Raskin and Dio were underperforming for me. At best, I would say that they were kind of blowing hot and cold. And I know that when we brought Chukwuanyi in, there was a little bit of question or concern about the fact that we kind of had a lot of midfielders that were the same type of player, in that none of them are, I hate sort of using the numbers, but maybe we've got too many sixes and not enough eights, arguably. But what I do think is that I think Chukwuanyi has raised the standard in midfield, and it goes back to what we said earlier about competition for places. I think we've seen that more than anywhere else in the centre of the midfield. We have seen Raskin dropped, and we have seen Dio dropped, and we've seen Chukwuanyi dropped. You know, that the rotation of those three, I think that's helping to bring more out of the other centre midfielders. Really good to see Conor Barron back yesterday, by the way. Again, I think he came on, think he did well. Don't think there was much he could have done with that handball. I'm sure we'll come on to talk about that. Don't think we can have any blame on him there. So I feel we're in a good spot.
Yeah, no, and a good segue, I guess, into the next goal, Alan, because just after half time, again, really good work from Nico Raskin, winning the ball back on the halfway line, plays it into Nadiri, great first touch, drives at goal, slips Moore in, little shift back onto right, and it's a kind of first time early finish, which was really good. But I want, before I hand it over to you, just highlight Nico, I think, a little bit, because I think we've been quite critical of his performances this season. And while he was still a little bit wasteful with the ball yesterday, actually, he's involved in two or three of the goals, playing really, really well, scores himself. You know, that's the type of performance that in the next seven games we need to see from Nico. You know, he was showing his leadership qualities in that pitch yesterday. He was the player that we saw for six, 7 months last season that we really wanted to see for the whole of this season. So it was a big, big step in the right direction for him as well, wasn't it, Alan?
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, the reason that I think we can be harsh on Raskin is because we know he's a good player. So when you're not seeing it on the pitch, it's doubly frustrating. And he just needs to step up to the mark. You know, it's that simple. You know, playing for Rangers carries an expectation. And if we know you're good, you know, he's playing regularly for a very, very good international team. But we haven't seen it enough at club level. We just haven't across his whole Rangers career. He's played in fits and starts. So we just need him to start performing consistently, because he's got the quality. There's no doubt about that. And it's, you know, if we can get a tune out of him in this run-in and he can step up and start playing close to his max, then he could have a big, big say on where this league title ends up, because we rely on him and we're going to need him. So it's been good. The last couple of games he has improved. So let's hope he can continue in that upwards trajectory.
Yeah, and now it wouldn't be a Rangers performance, Ross, if we didn't take a shotgun, stick it under our chin, and almost blow our head off. And that's kind of how Aberdeen get back into the game. You know, we haven't long made it 2-0, where we are the masters of our own downfall. You know, ultimately it leads to Chukwuanyi giving the ball away. And to be fair to Aberdeen, you know, it's a nice little one-touch, quick pass and movement, slips the Aberdeen player in, it's a really good finish. But you could then start to feel a little bit of nerves creeping in for the crowd for the next 5 minutes, because it gave Aberdeen a little bit of a boost. We've got to cut these out, especially as we get into this split. You're playing against better quality opposition. You cannot afford to be giving away chances like that in these games coming up, can we?
No, absolutely. And I think the frustrating thing is it was just so needless. You know, we were in total control of the game. And, you know, it just gives fans, pundits, whoever, it gives an opportunity to question the mentality of the team, which I don't think is necessarily fair at that time. You know, we've actually looked, second half of this season, I think from the new year onwards, we've looked really, really defensively solid. You know, we went on a good run of clean sheets for a little while back in January, and, you know, we're then conceding the odd goal here and there, before obviously we conceded two against Hearts, two against Livingston, and two against Celtic in a row. But actually, I feel like defensively we'd looked really, really solid. And that's despite, as we referenced earlier, kind of chopping and changing a wee bit in the back four. Just now, as we are probably looking a wee bit more settled in terms of the personnel at the back line, it's just a really silly, needless thing to do. What I will say is that we responded to it really, really well. You know, we conceded that goal. Within 10 minutes, we're back two goals ahead. And it didn't... Aberdeen had a good 10 minutes, I'd say, as well. You know, and you probably have to expect that. You're not going to have a whole dominance for the whole 90 minutes, but this was as close as we could have got. I think that's just the frustrating thing, is it was completely needless. It was a real lapse in concentration. It was a bit silly. And it just put a wee bit of pressure on the team that they didn't need. The players didn't need that. It's a shame for Butland. You know, I think I saw Butland's 150th game yesterday. It would have been nice for him to mark that with a clean sheet. You know, he didn't really do anything wrong all game, as far as I can recall. So yeah, just a wee shame in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, so it was the only chance Aberdeen had. They never made Butland make a save, and as you say, on his 150th appearance, it would have been great. It would have been great for him to be able to get that clean sheet. But just while you were talking about defence, I think Alan, the one player that's impressed me since he's come back out of the team has been Jigga. And there was a 4-on-2 situation, I think, where he dealt with it brilliantly. I think it was it the first half?
Yeah.
And you know, I think it shows the level of maturity that he's developed since coming back from the AFCON. You know, him and Fernandez building a great partnership there, but his handling of that situation was great, because you know that could have been a fairly dangerous move had Aberdeen made anything from it. But it says a lot when we are talking about him being, you know, a stick on with Manny Fernandez as a centre half pairing for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and you know, fair play to him, because you know he's got Champions League experience. Obviously, Wolves bought him for big money, haven't really played him. I mean, we brought him in at the start of the season with the very, very, very heavy caveat that he's playing in a Russell Martin team coached by some kind of basically non-league English coaches that, you know, should never have been at Rangers. He did not look comfortable or capable. You've got to say that. At European level, he looked bad. Let's be honest, he did look bad. It looked like out of his depth. But fair play to him. You know, it might just be a lesson for everyone to say, look, give him a few months to settle in and get used to it and get the minutes in his legs. Suddenly he can come out and look really effective. Someone with the physical profile that Jigga has is perfectly suited for Scottish football. Perfectly suited. He's a big guy. He's an absolute unit. He's got big, muscly thighs, and he's rapid. You know, and that's, when was the last time we had a really fast centre-half? And that 4-on-2 was the perfect example of it. He used his pace to get back and just mark the space. Aberdeen didn't know what to do. And I really liked it, because when he did it, after it was cleared, the crowd gave him a cheer. The crowd cheered as if it was a really good passage of attacking play, but it was the crowd that appreciated his defensive work. And it's been a real turnaround for him, because, I mean, even around Christmas maybe, we were all sort of saying, yeah, just send them back in January, not fussed. Whereas now we're thinking, right, sorry, how much you need for this guy? Because, as I say, profile-wise, he's perfect. He's in that Fernandez chubby team mold that, you know, clubs will pay big money for him because of his physical profile, and they'll trust themselves to coach him and to be a better player. And you know, Jigga's done really well on that. And I really like him. I really like what he's done. Again, I really like having a settled centre-half pairing, one of whom is absolutely rapid across the ground. And I thought he's handled everything that's been thrown at him really, really well. We saw it at Motherwell with Mazwanishi, really pacey, dangerous player. Didn't get a sniff when Jigga had him. We saw it again with Maida. Didn't get a sniff when Jigga had him. And it was only, you know, they only get into that when Suter came on and kind of stank the place out. So, you know, I think there's real promise there. And again, if this is to end up being a successful season, then he may well have a big say in that.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a really interesting point I want to bring up as well, because I think it was in Mikey Moore's post-match that he mentioned the influence of the manager, Ross. I guess you could probably see that with a couple of players. One of the criticisms that Danny Rule had when he went through the sticky patch with draws and stuff was, you know, questioning his mentality and whether he was right for this job. But you hear comments about Mikey Moore talking about how bad a place he was in before the manager came in, and the work that he's done there. You've got to assume that the manager's done very, very similar things with all the players in the squad, and maybe that's the reason why Giga is now performing at the level that he is. You know, he's going away to AFCON, not really playing a minute, and ever since coming back from that point, he has looked at a completely different player to the bomb scale that left us. You know, for me, that's a hugely positive step in the right direction for the manager, because if he can have that impact in a short space of time with these players, you know, good pre-season under our belt and continue to add quality additions, it's going to set us up well for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can see, amongst a few players, you can see Danny Rule has made a difference. Players that looked absolutely horrendous, hellish under Russell Martin. Giga is one. Moore didn't look good the first 6-7 games of the season. He didn't look like he was cut out for it. Fernandez was absolutely appalling when he didn't get many opportunities, many chances. I don't think any of us were really that disappointed that we weren't seeing him at that time. I think Danny Rule has improved individual players in his time at Rangers. Now there have been some that he's obviously not really been able to do that. I don't think it's going to work out for Majovski, for example. But even Chermiti, actually, I think Chermiti looks a very different player to the player that he looked in the first couple of months of the season. So it has, for me, again, they were saying on Sportsound yesterday that Danny Rose, he's coming, he's done very well, he's getting results. He's not really necessarily done anything drastic. He's not really changed anything dramatically in terms of shape or personnel or anything. I think it's the impact he's had on individual players. And I remember that when we were bringing him in, I remember the players from the likes of Sheffield Wednesday saying about what this guy has done for them and how he was the kind of coach that they wanted to play for. And that was what kind of encouraged me at that time that this might be I'm not pretending he was my first choice at that time, and I don't think he was anyone's first choice at that time, but it was one of the things that we all clung to. Unfortunately, a lot of Southampton players had said the same about Russell Martin, so I had a wee bit of PTSD from that, but the guy does seem to have understood what it takes to take these players that were very, very low in confidence and to pick them up and to get them playing. And you can see that with Mikey Moore. Mikey Moore is an 18-year-old that is full of talent. You know, you have to think he's destined for the very, very top. And it takes a good coach to unlock that, particularly after a rough start to the season.
Yeah, sorry to jump in, but just on that point, and I remember reading a couple of months ago now online, so, you know, pinch of salt and all that, so, but let's gossip and pretend it's true, that, you know, Mikey Moore had said to somebody, you know, when he came in initially under Russell Martin, it was very much, you know, I like to carry the ball, I like to get my head down and run with it. And it was very much, well, that's great, mate, but in my team, it's you take a touch and you pass it. Mm. And so if that's the way you're bringing in these young players, then you're saying, right, this is my way or the highway, guys. Again, might not be true, but you can see that being true, given the difference in the player. And if that's the kind of the way it was coached and it was replicated throughout the whole squad, suddenly you think, well, yeah, maybe John Souter didn't want to be passing it out from the back in Europe, you know, and he was just being coached or told to do that. And that's what ended in disaster. So, you know, a good manager comes in, looks what he's got to work with and gets that working, you know, and it's never going to be perfect. But I think Danny Rule's done that as best he possibly can. And as Ross says, you know, the uptick in certain performers has been really notable and really welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll park the Majovski goal for a wee second, because we'll probably have a wee wider chat about VR in general. I know it's a topic that we all love discussing, but Alan, I guess the icing on the cake was the final goal from our captain, Tav. You know, free kick set up, looks like it's going to be better for a left-footed player to hit, but, you know, upsteps that man who whips in a cracking free kick to finally put the game to bed, 4-1 up, and his eighth goal of the season in the league, I think it is. So really good contribution. A player who we need to manage his minutes in games, certain games he will not be a starter, but if he can still have that type of impact, then he's a player that hopefully can contribute some more free kicks in the running.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that you don't lose that quality. You know, you might get more miles in the legs and all this stuff and slow down, but that kind of dead ball quality tends to stay. And from the position that free kicks in, as you say, taking it with his right foot, the only place he can score from that is getting it right under the bar. And that's exactly where he gets it. And I was delighted for him. I think, again, I saw the statistic yesterday, can't quite remember. I think that's him now tied with Laurent Blanc as the fourth highest scoring defender of all time, maybe the fifth. I mean, it's not bad company to be in. I mean, Graham Alexander's in that top 10, but let's not get bogged down in detail. You know, he's in exalted company on that list. And I'm delighted for him because, you know, I keep using this phrase and I don't mean to repeat myself, but he's another one that can have a really big say in this running, a really big say, because we know he's got the quality. We know he's got the mentality. As much as Tav gets a slagger and certain things and these things he's not good at and all this stuff, that's fine. No matter how badly he's played, he always wants the ball. He's always looking for the ball, and the players are always looking for him to give him the ball. No matter how badly it's going, you know, and you saw that yesterday in the second half. He was always in space in the right. Players are always looking for him. He's always driving forward. He always wants to play the forward pass. Loves breaking into the box. You know, we need that. We are going to need that. In a team that's struggling for goals, we are going to need that cut and thrust in that final third that he gives us. And hopefully that can be a wee confidence booster for him, because that it was not a good penalty he took in that cup shootout. Not like him to go to try and put it there, to try and put it high and central. And he'll be regretting that. But look, we're going to need him in this running. And I was really, really pleased that he put in that fourth, just to put a wee bit of gloss in the scoreline. And of course, you hate to say it. You really do hate to say it. But given the way it is at the moment, you do start needing to think about goal difference. You do. Yeah. There's no point sugarcoating it. You can't be sitting down clinging for 1-0 wins. You do need to think about trying to get that chalked up, because I think we've got the best goal difference in the top three at the moment. And it's, as they say, it's worth an extra point. So, you know, we need to think about that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I said we'd cover the VAR stuff off, so we'll be quick. So Frankie's obviously given us a 45-minute deadline tonight, so we can maybe go to 50 minutes at a push. That was, what, the 20th goal, I think, Ross, that we've had chopped off this year from a VAR point of view. But there was noises over the weekend that the club are trying to get the rest of Scottish football to at least have a discussion and a debate on the standard of officiating in the country. It's not the first time. I don't think it'll be the last time that we continue to have this discussion on this podcast. I think, for me, it's the right thing to do. You know, ultimately, we all want the game to be better. We want better consistency. And, you know, the latest VAR show from Willie Collum just looks embarrassing again from a Scottish football standpoint. Should the club be looking to engage with other clubs, or should we be taking a much harder line and being a bit more vocal when it comes to our criticism of VAR decisions, etc.? Now, even Danny Rule in the press conference kind of like giving people the benefit of the doubt and saying we're all human and we continue to make mistakes. But, you know, at what point do we say in Scotland enough is enough, we need to get better? Because it's not just impacting Rangers. You know, we've seen some terrible decisions. You know, the St. Mirren v. Motherwell game where the boy gets sent off and slightly dives and stuff. The fact that we are re-refereeing games and still not getting decisions right is just incredulous to me.
Yeah, I think that's a really key point, is that there's two issues here. We're not getting decisions right, and we are re-refereeing absolutely everything. And that was never the point of VAR. VAR, there's two aspects to VAR. VAR is binary on offsides, for example. It's a yes or a no, in the same way as goal line technology. You know, it crossed the line or it didn't. He was offside or he wasn't. But the other side of VAR is the more subjective. The red cards, the foul and the build-ups, the handballs, and that was always clear and obvious. Right, that was the phrase that was supposed to be used, if I'm not mistaken. You know, has the referee made a clear and obvious mistake? That does not get applied in practice. Certainly not in the VAR review of Rangers, because it feels like we are at the point of, you know, really forensically going through everything in a Rangers. To have 20 goals chalked off by VAR in a season, it's so far and away above the league average. It's so far and away above anyone else in this league. And you do have to start wondering why it is. You know, the one yesterday, it's a handball where the boy's, his arm is, let's say, his hand is raised above his hip, for example, but it's pretty close into his body because he's flinching. It's a natural reaction when a ball's being thumped at you at that speed from that distance. he doesn't go on to score. So it's not, you know, that little part of the rule that if you handball it and then go on immediately to score, then that's a handball. So that's not the case. It's a long time away from, you know, you talk about attacking phase of play, but you've got the whole thing with Jedi Gassama that has to sort of take the ball back and then beats two men and then it cuts it back to. So if that's the same attacking phase of play, it's a very long attacking phase of play. You've also got the fact that the Aberdeen boy headers the ball. So to my mind, is that not a change of possession? So, you know, all of these things, I needed that wee moan there. Sorry about why I think that's a really bad decision yesterday. But, you know, Rangers have tried in the past, over the past 5 or 6 years, Rangers have tried to have conversations about the standard of refereeing. And we kind of get ridiculed when we do this. We get ridiculed when we put out a statement. We get ridiculed or laughed at or when we try and have these conversations about, not about corruption, not about conspiracy, but about raising standards. And we get slaughtered by our own fans when we don't say anything publicly. So there is no winning for the club here, in my opinion. Now, Rangers are coming at this from an approach of we want to raise standards. We want to get, you know, we're all spending money on VAR. Every month, Willie Collum goes on the VAR review show to effectively present a list of things they got wrong, which is, I mean, you know, fair play to them for actually getting those things out there and showing the mistakes. But every month now, it's just a catalogue of mistakes. And sometimes it's become so embarrassing for them to admit those mistakes that he tries to kind of manipulate the situation or kind of gaslight his audience as to why Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain shouldn't have been sent off for that. You know, it's crazy. So Rangers are coming at this from a perspective of trying to raise standards. Why would anyone disagree with that? Why would any club not want to engage in that? Every single club, every single manager this season at some point has moaned about a refereeing decision, has moaned about decisions not going their way. Fans of both Old Firm teams believe that the referees are against them. Fans of everyone else believe that the referees are in favour of the Old Firm. So take away chat about conspiracy. No one thinks the refs are any good. No one is out there saying that consistently the refereeing is at a good enough standard. So I can't see why anyone would disagree with having an honest conversation about what's going wrong and what we should do about it. VAR at the moment, it's not helping. It's simply not helpful. And I think there needs to be a chat about whether we just use it for offsides, whether we just use it for goaling technology and that kind of thing. Because where we are now with forensically re-refereeing Conor Barron's hand position 30 seconds before a goal is scored, with the ball having changed possession in that time, it's not what the sport's about for me.
Yeah, I think it's that inconsistency. We obviously saw it when we played St Mirren, Alan. There was the Gogic handball, and then that evening there was the Dundee penalty that Dundee United got. You know, two, I wouldn't say similar instances, because the Dundee player is on the edge of the box away from goal, and that's given as a handball and a penalty, and the Gogic one in the middle of the goal as the ball's headed towards goal isn't given. But, you know, again, as I will hop back and say, this isn't just about decisions that have been given against Rangers. It is more general in Scottish football. There's been numerous examples, and hopefully Scottish football can stop hating itself for a wee minute and actually have an open conversation about whether the investment we've made in VAR is good, and whether we need to start holding these officials accountable for bringing themselves up to the standard that we require as a club and as a nation, really.
That's exactly it. You know, consistency is key. If the referees are consistently bad, 90 minutes out, now everyone's the same, you would kind of have to grin and bear it, as annoying that would be. But they're not. You know, the same incident is happening in one game that leads to X decision, the same incident leads to Y decision the next game. There's absolutely no consistency to it. And as soon as you don't have consistency, then that leads itself to suggest, what, is it a training problem? Is it just a quality problem? I don't know. There was a clip on Twitter I saw where it was Willie Collum explaining why, you know, this penalty shouldn't have been given because it wasn't a deliberate handball and the distance was too close. Clipped up with the one at Ibrox when he said, yeah, definitely a handball by Sterling, yeah, even though it's really close. And then, you know, the Curb Your Enthusiasm end credit music kicks in straight away just because he's making an absolute fool of himself. I'll be very surprised if that YouTube show continues next season because of how ridiculous it's been. And it's nothing to do with the fans or the clubs or the players. It's to do with the referees who really, really strangely can't seem to get their story straight in terms of what is and what isn't, even though they've got time, they've got weeks and weeks for Willie Colm to prepare that, but he still seems to get it completely wrong, and he doesn't seem to know what he said the previous month, which again, that lends itself to what is it? Is it a lack of training? Is it a lack of competence? Is it a combination of things? Yeah, it probably is, but it's certainly not good enough. And yeah, that penalty that was given against Dundee in the Derby, that's just ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. No fan wants to see that, you know? Even I'm sure Dundee United fans will look at that and go, that's just absurd.
Absolutely. And mentioning Dundee United...
it's like we set that up. It was great.
Yeah, no, I mean, given we've only got 3 minutes or so left before Frankie literally shuts it down, I want to finish on a bit of a positive, because we now, and I'll get comments for both of you on this point, we're now heading into next game being Dundee United at home, which is great. You know, actually thinking that if we win that game, we go top of the league for the first time this season. And it might only be for a short time. Obviously, the Hearts then need to play. But what an amazing opportunity it is, Alan, for this group of players to set a bit of a marker, to get themselves into that pole position, regardless of how long it is for, but to really start ramping up the pressure on Hearts. We've got 2 weeks, more or less, to rest and recover apart from those on international duty. But when we come back, we've got to blow Dundee United away and take advantage of that home game.
Yeah, the way that's fallen in terms of timings is really good for us. You know, we've got a Saturday at 3 o'clock for the first time in God knows how long. And then obviously Hearts and Celtic playing the next day, both of whom are away from home. You know, we keep saying it, and it is a cliche, every game is massive. But, I mean, that is really massive, that game, because it is the first time we've got a chance to go top of the league since when? Since this season, maybe?
Oh, no, yeah, but I don't think we've been top this year. Yeah,
exactly. You know, we'll be in very late March by that point.
Yeah.
So, you know, the gauntlet's been thrown down. It's a home game. It's against a team in the bottom six. You've just got to go out and do it. And hopefully Ibrox atmosphere is good. Hopefully the players can respond to that. Win the game, I don't know, 7 or 8 nil. You know, bump up the goal difference. And then, okay, it's over to Hearts and Celtic the next day. Because, you know, Hearts are grinding wins. They're doing well. You've got to give them that credit. They're getting through it. But, you know, we have to put pressure on them. And if they suddenly slip off the top of the league for the first time in months and months, that's when the pressure really cranks up. And then, you know, it could... I mean, let's just remain calm. But it's a really nice feeling to be in this position, given the way the season started.
Yeah. One game at a time, Ross, and I'll leave you with the last word. What motivation are you going to give us for the Dundee United game and for the remaining 7 cup finals that we've got?
One game at a time, but I think there's plenty of ups and downs still to come. I think there's plenty of twists and turns still to come.
How many cliches can you fit into one answer? Come on.
I know. I'm actually genuinely nervous for the next... I mean, how long have we got to the end of the season? Let's call it the next... two and a half months. I mean, I don't know that my heart can take it. I don't know that I've got the constitution to get through this, because I think it's going to be... don't forget, after the split, we need to go to Parkhead. We need to go to Tynecastle. We've got to play Motherwell, who have been a problem for us. The opportunity to go top of the league that next weekend, or sorry, the week after next, we could be top of the league. We could be... a further 3 points ahead of Celtic, who are going to drop points at St Mirren. It's an exciting time.
I think, I mean, I've only seen the highlights of them today, but from what I've read on Twitter, they were absolutely dreadful today. Yeah. Right, okay, now we can't boast we've been dreadful in some games this season. Okay, that's fine. But in this sort of crunch time, apparently they were really, really poor. It wasn't a smash and grab at all from Dundee United. It was like a well-deserved victory on a dreadful pitch, you've got to say. So, you know, they will not be confident. And that's great for us, because momentum is huge in sport. And that's a real, real huge blow to their momentum. And you know, we have to hope we can take advantage of that, because it's in our own hands now. You know, as Rab said right at the top, the league is now back in our own hands. Win every game, we should be champions, at least on goal difference. And that's, you know, the players just have to grasp that. What an opportunity it is.
Absolutely. We focus on ourselves one game at a time. And that's going to bring us to the end of it, slightly 1 minute over the 50 minutes that I promised Frankie we'd get this done in. But I need to say a big thank you to both my guests, Alan. As always, a pleasure, mate. Thank you very much.
Yeah, enjoyed that. Frankie's free to go and watch the new series of Naked Attraction, whatever it is he's desperate to go and see. I don't know what it is.
Ross, great to have you on the show again, mate. Really good talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
As well as being live on YouTube tonight, the show will be available on all podcasting platforms, that's iTunes, Spotify, Acast, Stitcher, etc. in the coming days. We will be back on Friday the 3rd of April at 9 p.m. with a preview show, where Ben will be hosting Alex to look ahead to that Dundee United game at Ibrox. All that's left for me to say is a massive thank you to everybody that's been watching live and to anybody that is listening or watching back. Thank you and have a good evening.